don't tell. Well, hello. Welcome to the Backpack Show. We have yet another episode where I don't have the support and help of Carrie O'Shea Gorgon, although she does still all kinds of things that make it better for me. She was helping me because I was messing up the calendar invites, so she was setting them back around again. We have two women-owned businesses today, one in the cannabis space. So we're going to talk to Autumn Shelton and Hannah Brand from Autumn Brands. And we're going to talk to Andrea Bernholz from Swiminista. So women-owned businesses is our thing today. Cannabis farming is our thing today. And swimwear, because you know what? Even though you may or may not have put on a few COVID LBs, swimming is coming around the corner. So we're going to have to get ready. We have to learn about it. So I'll say hi to the first few guests that are in the audience. I'd like to say hi to my biological father, Steve Brogan, and also his wife, Diane Brogan, who gave birth to me. Hello, Mom and Dad. Good to see you. We're going to talk about pot and swimsuits today, Mom.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Carrie Gorgon, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
So excited. Hey, Chloe. So good to see you. Hello, Elizabeth in Texas. Great to see you. Women-owned brands today. We have two women-owned brands today, so it's going to be great. Makes it sound like we've never interviewed a woman on this show, but, you know, what am I going to do? So I'm going to grab them and we're going to start talking really quick about it because I have about 8 billion questions of things that you've always wanted to know. So let's see, Autumn and Hannah. So Autumn Shelton, CFO of Autumn Brands and Hannah Brand. Hannah's in a very noisy environment because her coworkers are giving her no respite. So we're going to have to do what we can in and out of things. So I want to talk a little bit. Hey, Janice in Houston. Good to see you down the street from Elizabeth. I want to go right through it. So I want to talk a little bit about Autumn Brands. And you know, one of the things that I had pulled as a little note was from tulips in Holland more than a century ago to cannabis in Santa Barbara County. What's that about? Like, what made you say, you know, there's a lot of sense why we'd want to start a brand like this, but tell us a little bit about this history and tulips and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. So my dad immigrated here with his brother and my grandparents around, 40 years ago. So my brother and I are first generation American, and we have a line of 6 generations of farming that came from Holland. So, you know, cannabis for us is just now our generation of farming, just like how tulips were back in the day, vegetables and cut flowers.
So in your history comes all this, you know, ability to work around, do farming stuff and whatnot. Cannabis is a different plant, though. It's a different crop. What made you put this together? And, you know, I guess the obvious of, gee, there's a lot of people now that it's legal and whatnot, but how did you decide to form this business? What went into putting this together?
Well, Hannah's dad and our partner, he was growing cut flowers in the greenhouses that we're in now. And I was the CFO for that company. And he got approached to lease out a few of his greenhouses to grow medical marijuana under the collective model days. And under a lot of risk assessment, he decided to do that. And then shortly after, saw the opportunity and where cannabis was going. And together we decided, let's all do something together and change over this crop, because there was so much competition with South America with cut flowers that this was a new opportunity. And he saw this opportunity also for his daughter Hannah and his son Johnny, who are going to be graduating from college a few years later in agriculture, that they could come and be part of this, because cut flowers just wasn't going to be an opportunity that they were going to be interested in. So at that time, that's what we did. We ended up switching over the greenhouses from cut flowers to cannabis under the medical marijuana collective days, and then transitioned into the regulated market in 2018. And Autumn Brands was born.
On the one hand, it seems like something that you could... It seems like an easy transition in some ways and a really tricky transition in others. Now, besides all the regulations that come with this, and I mean, it's almost like I feel like that weight over everything that Autumn is saying is like da-da-da, saying the words that make sure that people know we did this all legally over and over again. It's at every turn. And the rules change, and the rules were harder, you know, over the last bunch of years. And I wouldn't say they're easier now, but at least they're getting a little bit more unified. there's a big risk to doing this, I guess, is what I want to say. And again, as CFO, you know, with your mindset, with, you know, looking at this versus cut flowers, this is a bigger change. I'm curious to know how you decide to press forward. And I'm also curious to know from either of you or both of you, what makes you go, all right, here's why this is going to be a worthwhile risk. And here's what we're going to do about, you know, mitigating some of the problems.
Well, since we got a little bit of an understanding of how it all worked in the collective model days, I felt really confident that we could really stay in compliance, do what we needed to do. But yes, back then when we started, it was still gray market. A helicopter went overhead and you're like, what's happening? But being in today's regulated market, being it's legal in California, you don't have that fear anymore. I mean, back then too, we weren't talking about it. And today we can just be obviously very open about it and put out a consumer product that we're very proud of. So, you know, part of my job and duty as CFO is financials, but I also handle all the compliance side of it. So really understanding all the rules, all the regulations, and making sure that we are in tune and in line with all that, because we're business people in the end, and we really want to be here for a long time. So we're dedicated to this company and dedicated to doing it right. And it's very hard. And yes, it's the new regulations and what you have to follow is certainly much easier under the collective model days than what we have to go through today. But once you get into your routine and you get in the habit of how everything needs to go, it works.
Scrolling through your website, just sort of showing some of your products and all that, and it's walking through, for instance, your CBD. It's interesting to note just how many different kinds of products you can pull out of this. I wonder if that's different than sort of, you know, what was experienced before. Hannah, you know, tell me a little bit about that, the whole idea of how many strains, how many things, and the product line and all that.
Yeah, so back in the collective model days, you're kind of growing a couple of strains and the best ones that were in your environment for the final product. But now having your own brand, you kind of need to open up your SKUs and grow more variety of things. You know, you want to have a couple sativa, indicas, hybrids. You want some things that are higher testing, lower testing. And then we also wanted a CBD strain. So it's a 2-to-1 THC rich CBD. So it gives you a nice mellow high, but it's really relaxing. And, you know, especially for people that are just starting to smoke cannabis, that's something that's really easy for them to get into it. And then also all of a sudden, Autumn, her husband and my dad went to Vegas for, you know, one of these big trade shows for marijuana. Look at all the industry. And they found this Futurola knockbox that had, you know, been around for a little while. So now we're making a pre-roll line. So it's just like things kind of slowly evolved and we did one step at a time and didn't try to expand to too many SKUs at once, but see what our greenhouses and our limitations are. So we normally grow around 11 to 13 varieties at a time.
Now, again, you're the farm side of the situation. You're not the dispensary. So you sell to various dispensaries, and that's the way the product gets distributed. Is that the California method?
So we package every here and it's in final form, tamper sealed. So that's what the consumer is going to buy. But it has to be picked up by another distributor license. They have to quarantine it for a third party testing lab to come in. They test it. Once it passes its COA, then it can be released and sold to dispensaries, which is another license.
So then as far as what you sell, then you sell jars of leaf. Flower jars, pre-rolls, and some CBD ointment. Did I get most of everything that you have on the?
It's actually not a CBD ointment. It's a full spectrum salve, pain relieving salve. So it is a 1-to-2.
It has both.
Yes, has both. And because THC is really important, that's where we really get the pain relief. But the CBD for the inflammation relief. And that is actually manufactured off-site. So we send our flower to a manufacturer. He's able to cold press and manufacture it into oil. So it's full spectrum. It's everything. You're getting all the terpenes, all the cannabinoids. A lot of products out there that will create it into distillate and strip it apart. But we want it everything together because you really get all the benefits that way. And then it's sent to a developer, also all in Santa Barbara County here locally. And then they developed it and put it all together into this amazing formulation. And then that has also been picked up by the distributor and then sold off to the dispensaries. But it is, we're very proud of that sale.
The branding that goes on is always fascinating to me. And I've had a few branding conversations. One thing that's interesting is that, of course, the way it was branded before when it was, the black market, you could steal other people's names. So there was a lot of branding that was on the back of other things. So like Gorilla Glue was a known strain, which of course the Gorilla Glue company says, well, you can't do that now that it's legalized. You're going to have to come up with some new names. So some of that's happened. But then there's also, for instance, I recommended it to my parents. I said, you're in Vegas. You can use both. You could do it for personal entertainment if you want, or you could use it for medical. But the people that were there were very much, it was a lot of brands that were still kind of stuck in, tie-dye, Cheech and Chong kind of branding. And as we look at your brand, obviously, that's not the way you went. You've taken a very, attractive kind of look and feel. How did that start? Like what went into the conversation to make this kind of packaging and this sort of look and feel?
Well, when we started, in the collective model days, and you went to a dispensary back then, it was just a mason jar full of flour, right? That's how you could get it. And then once the regulated markets started, you had to have it packaged, final form, everything like this, tamper sealed. So what our first design was more medical, because that's kind of where we had stemmed from. And so it was the chemistry symbol of THC. And then as we kind of got into this into a year, we realized that this wasn't just a medical focused product. This is a health and wellness product. This is something that our bodies naturally bind to in our endocannabinoid system. And this was just something that's really something that is helps people regulate depending on what kind of ailment or what's going on in their body. So our focus really changed to being really health and wellness. And that's what you see in our packaging today.
Gotcha. It's interesting in so many ways to be very white hat about it now. The fact that it just is what it is. It's just a business. Does that ever come up, like when you're talking to people just sort of random, like back in the old days when we could actually get coffee at places and things like that? Do you still have that sort of stutter in your language, maybe, Hannah, when someone says, so what do you do? And you're like, run a farm.
I mean, definitely. So when we made the transition when I was at college, and I was just like, oh yeah, I'm studying to get a horticulture degree and go grow flowers. But, in my mind, I knew I was going to be growing cannabis, but no one else knew yet. So it's definitely more hush hush. And then there's a couple of years where it was like, oh, okay, yes, you're allowed to talk about this, but it's still kind of like you didn't always choose to. Right. But nowadays, this past year, it's definitely, oh, what do you do? Oh, I grow weed. It's not, a big deal anymore. And most people know anyway, so it doesn't really matter what they do. It's all legal and there's no reason to hide it. I'm very proud of it.
That's right. Autumn, back to the money thing for a long time, and maybe so still, there's a disparity between federal government and state government on what's okay and what's not. So you can't just roll up with your credit card, for instance, at least in a lot of places. In Massachusetts, it's an incredible merry-go-round to try to get money moved around, which I think is just dramatically dangerous for a lot of these businesses, because there's just a lot of these kind of experiences where you're carting cash around when you would rather do it any other way. As the systems have changed, as the rules have changed, where is it now and where does it need to be in your mind?
Well, we certainly started, a lot of cash. You're dealing with a lot of cash and everything that you do. But I was fortunate that I really stayed on top of trying to get us a bank account. And after about 6 months of endless paperwork and compliance checks, we were able to actually get a bank account with a credit union. So we have been banked for well over a year and a half to 2 years now.
That's great.
Which makes a huge difference. It kind of legitimizes you as well, in a certain way where you're not having to do everything in cash and handle it that way. And you can write checks to all your vendors and but most of the industry still isn't. And that's why the Safe Banking Act just got put back in to motion again. And it's really important for everyone to be able to operate like other businesses. All these states have legalized, but we're still finding ourselves, stuck handling cash. And especially, this has been a really hard thing in a pandemic. Nobody wants to handle cash. No one wants to, that just adds more risk. So the more that we can do with legislation to really make a difference, and then also getting loans for, different, businesses, we're fortunate that we're still self-funded and we haven't needed any type of capital. But, you know, in order to really be able to compete in this industry, a lot of businesses really need to get that access, and it's still very challenging.
So every now and again, YouTube comes in and has interesting comments that are related to nothing. So how much money have you made? Billions is the answer, Jimmy. you can tell because they have flying Teslas, not regular ones. And Space Spear says, hi, Space Spear. People think about that. They think it's a lot of money, but there's a massive amount of taxation applied to this business too. That is not like any other business run in the United States. So, in your head, you're thinking it's just bags of money. You just grow plants, you sell the plants, and there we go. We're all going to have flying Teslas. It's not how it works. You get taxed for everything, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, we pay at the state level, probably anywhere from 16 to 20% in cultivation tax, just like straight off our plants. And then at the county level, we pay another 4%. And then, of course, in the cannabis, since it's still federally illegal, there's the tax code 280E, which doesn't allow us to write off normal expenses like a normal business could. So every single month, I actually have to do a full tax planning worksheet to really look at, okay, what are my non-deductible expenses and how much tax am I going to have to pay on top of that? So that we are always staying on top of how much we're going to owe. So we're planning ahead and we don't get stuck at the end with not enough cash flow for that. So the taxes are tremendous in this industry.
That's why I brought up Jimmy's question. I mean, for all I know, he's being funny, but you know, people think it's like so sexy, but you know, you're not the Colombian cartel, you're a farm. You know, no one goes into farming thinking, boy, am I gonna strike it. You know, it is not even in California do you like look at those really rich farmers. It doesn't work that way. But I'm grateful for you sharing all that information. So the whole opportunity to learn about this kind of thing. Who is the kind of person who decides they're going to do these sorts of things? Who's the kind of person, I guess you have to have a farm background if you're going to be on this side of it. Who makes the decision to start a business like this, I guess? Like, let's say there's a nice young lady sitting here thinking, I wonder what I'm going to be when I grow up. Should I start a cannabis farm?
We get that question a lot from people and wanting to know how to do it and if they can get involved, because people do. They want to get into this industry. It's new. It's exciting. But farming is challenging. You certainly need to have the right team and have a green thumb. I do not have a green thumb. I am the I am so grateful for the rest of our team and Hannah and Johnny and Hans and to be able to really get into the greenhouse. And, you know, there's a joke that cannabis grows like a weed, and it does, but it doesn't grow like a weed. Well, it takes a lot of TLC. It takes a lot of care and learning, you know, and Autumn Brands is dedicated to being pesticide free. As you can see our ladybugs there. And I probably couldn't say that for most businesses. Everyone sprays probably a little bit of pesticide still, because it's really hard to grow an agricultural product without pesticides. But for us, we really want to be able to provide a natural product. And so we only use good pests to combat the bad pests, which in turn actually allows us to have all these native ladybugs that find their way into our greenhouses on their own and just live there and continuously are laying their larvae and creating just this amazing natural habitat in our greenhouses. So, you know, it is very challenging. We lose a lot of plants that way. Growing any type of agricultural product is always challenging. You never know what's going to happen in the year. You can't control it. But, you know, anybody that really does want to get into cannabis, there's so many different ways, you know, from IT to packaging to any of these auxiliary kind of companies. But if you have a passion for it, then do it. But don't try to be all fancy in the beginning. You know, really just grow within your means. And that's who, you know, Hannah and I and Johnny and Hans were really dedicated to just staying the course and growing, you know, at a level that we can continue to do it successfully and not take ourselves down, because it's really easy to get lost into this and try to do more than you can. But be smart about it but follow your passion for sure.
Beautiful. Autumn and Hannah, stick around. I'm going to have a little bitty panel at the end to ask you some questions. So if you can do that, I'm going to bring you backstage for a minute. Boop, boop. That means I'm going to bring Andrea Bernholz up in just a minute. I have to do a little bit of loving to my brands. Thank you so much, by the way. So a few things. If you're an author, you're going to want to make a website because that's how people sell books, you silly fools. Use PubSite, pub-site.com. You can make your own site. It's super quick and easy. It is free for 14 days, and it's only $19.99 a month thereafter. If you want them to make the site for you, that's only $499 US. Or give me $2,000 and I'll do it for you. This show is made on StreamYard, cbrogan.me/StreamYard. You're going to have to find your own cannabis farm, but you can make a show like this super easy. cbrogan.me/StreamYard. If you are not finding me attractive enough, you can make your own choice and go to the audio podcast. It's perfectly fair. The audio podcast is hosted by castos.com, but you just go anywhere that you normally get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever else. I'm running out of names. And hey, do you want a .online domain? You can get one. cbrogan.me/online. You can get one for 99 cents for the first year using the code Chris. There you go. So I'm going to grab Andrea in just 1 second. But first, Twitch people come to me and say, I've got my first Twitch spammers of the day. If I want to become famous, I could buy followers, primes, and viewers on this great website. bigfollows.com. Wow, I'm going to be famous, Andrea. And then I'll buy swimwear with it. Hi, Andrea. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
You know, it is the best Tuesday that I've had so far this week.
Why is that?
Because I'm talking to you. House. Right. We could talk a little bit about Swiminista. So, Andrea, you're the founder of Swiminista, but you're known for other brands. You did Rockin' Republic, Titan. You've done all kinds of things. Why was this your path? What made you say, you know what? I got this. I'm just going to tackle the world and make it my own. And I'm going to start in this particular lane. Tell me a little bit about where you came from.
Well, after we sold Rockin' Republic, I had a baby. So I kind of was tapping out in the fashion industry. And then when I was at Rockin' Republic, we didn't do any licenses. We did everything ourselves. We never, like when we did shoes, you know, I was in Italy and picking out at the factories, picking out leathers and working it. So after we sold it, I, you know, wanted to kind of retire a little bit. And then I was lured into Titan. But I thought the reason why I went to Titan, which was a shoe licensing company who did the likes of Zendaya and Gwen Stefani, the Lamb brand. I had never done a licensing platform. So for me, it was really interesting to learn about it. And I came in as their CEO and I realized that I'm an entrepreneur. It has to be my own baby.
So you couldn't just choose to make what they had and just grow it. You decided you were going to have to start it yourself, build it yourself, come up with all the pieces yourself.
Did you lose me?
I did for a little bit.
Okay. So anyway, I finished my contract at Titan. And then not long after that, I was on a holiday in Mexico with girlfriends. And we were all complaining about how our swimwear didn't fit right. You know, it was too big over here or too small over here, or you kind of popped out. And so everyone, of course, looked at me coming from the fashion industry. They're like, why don't you?
We're just going to have a freezy day with Andrea. Uh-oh. Well, hey, it's live video. It's what we do. Andrea, what I'm going to ask you to do is maybe refresh your browser and see what you could do. Maybe come back on.
Okay, we're back. So my friends encouraged me. They said, why don't you start a swim brand? And my gut reaction, of course, at first was like, no way. And then, you know, it got me thinking and I started going home and I started Frankensteining my suits together, kind of putting things together, sewing them up. And, you know, I've lived in Southern California and Hawaii my whole life. So a swimsuit is an integral part of your life, you know? So it just kind of, it came from there. And, you know, I'm a little bustier, so it was really hard to find something that was supportive. I didn't want anything to bind behind my neck. So it was all about problem solving swimwear and making it sexy at the same time. Because if, you know, in the past, if you found something to cover yourself, you look like grandma or you're wearing a sports bra. Otherwise, it was, you'd pop out. So, you know, I got the opportunity to interview hundreds of women and ask them what they liked about swimwear. What are they missing? What do they want to see? So it was all about comfort, support, sexiness, confidence. And, you know, then for myself, as growing up in a very eco-friendly environment, you know, my parents were kind of the original hippies, and I grew up recycling. So that was a really big component I wanted to add to the brand. So all of our materials are made out of post-consumer plastics, like plastic bottles, and all of our packaging is either recyclable or compostable as well. And then we started our kids line too.
Yeah. I noticed that there's a lot of different cuts, obviously, because there's, you know, different people have different areas that they want to handle a different way. So, for instance, right. Bubbly Bottom is different than some of the other kinds of opportunities here. In the process, what does that mean for your kind of like, how many SKUs do you have to have to maintain this kind of fit? And what does that mean to the people who want to wear the swimwear?
Well, I don't have as many SKUs as it kind of looks because I have them recolored. But what I tried to do was like, okay, hey, if you still want something kind of sexy, but you need something to cover your tummy, here's a few styles. If you want something super, super sexy and super cheeky, here's a few styles. So I tried to accommodate a few different styles, you know, per kind of body area. And another really great thing about Swimanisa is I've tried to incorporate adjustability. So if you've got bottoms, you know, that adjust. So sometimes you're in between a size, or sometimes you're a little bigger or smaller, and you can adjust the sides. You can adjust, you know, how cheeky something is. So you can almost customize it to yourself so that you can get the optimal fit so you feel really confident.
Gotcha. And
that was a really big important part. And the fact that I get these text messages or emails from customers saying, you know, or reviews, how comfortable and how confident they feel, that to me is absolute success. When I make other women feel great, it's the happiest. I love those emails.
There's so many options. I mean, I look at like Bold Bottom, where, you know, it can go for someone who maybe is working with that, the front side of that area and trying to fix that up. I'm trying to use words that I don't know what the words are, but they're basically,
you know, sometimes, you know, we have the little pooch. So some that yeah. is a great suit that kind of sucks it in. Right. And it has the adjustability to make it higher or lower on your body.
Thank you for saving me the whole thing.
You got it.
and like you said, some people, I mean, swimwear seems to have just like a few different sizes. One is for, you know, quite busty. One is absolutely no bust. And there seems to be nowhere in between. And it doesn't really kind of work on those experiences, right? So your point about not wanting it to pull at your neck was kind of interesting too. That when you think about that, do you engineer a lot of this based on kind of your concerns, or and then it grew out into everybody else, or like how do you pull in your?
Well, it was collectively a joint conversation, if you will, amongst my friends of things that hurt your neck, or things that you popped out all the time, or things didn't fit right. So those were the same concerns that I had with swimwear and the same problems that I was having. So that's when I started, like I said, Frankensteining different suits together to get the optimal fit. And then I had the good fortune to have a swim store that was not too far from my house. And the owners there, they've been in the business 20 years, body and soul, in Tarzana. And they let me just go in and talk to women and ask them what they liked. I was able to try, you know, have them try on some samples to see if women did like this. And, you know, having the adjustability and having things being able to crisscross or just be a bra strap, people really responded well to that. Women really, you know, grabbed onto that. And I've expanded into different styles. And I, you saw, I've expanded into the kids' collection, some caftans, thongs. Mm-hmm. And I was also super fortunate to have a collaboration with Christian Lacroix. And that's one of the beautiful prints right there. And for those of you who don't know, just hang up the phone. No. Christian Lacroix, he's a fabulous designer. He's known for his amazing prints. And he went more into the housewares and home goods in the last few years. And then I heard that they were doing collaborations with different brands. So I jumped on board, actually jumped on a plane to Paris and met with them. And we did the collaboration, and it's proving to be amazing. And it's so great to go through this entire amazing catalog of all these cool prints and then incorporating them onto some of our best sellers. And it's doing phenomenal.
There's some really interesting colors in the Christian Lacroix collection that are just things I wouldn't expect, in this sort of almost stained glass kind of look and all that. There's some yeah. real interesting moves. I alluded to slightly humorous, but also true. I mean, everybody put on their COVID-15, so they're going to have to be thinking a little differently about swimwear. What else has changed for you as a business because of, you know, the last year or so? And what's been good for it and bad for it? And where have you had to kind of put your extra calories and all your years of experience to bear?
Well, I will say, at first I was kind of freaked out for about a day. I was like, what am I going
to? Oop, we lost Andre again. Well, so far we've been good at only losing her for 5 or 6 seconds at a time. So we'll see what happens. I'll just smile and wait and hope.
Okay, and we're back. So at first I was very concerned, obviously, like the rest of the world. And I had a lot of orders cancel. I had like a trunk show tour at the Four Seasons cancel. So I had to wrap my head around, like, what can I do, right? And also, I had to show and be a good example for my daughter of, like, okay, you know, when the stuff hits the fan, what are you going to do? You can't just close your business and call it a day. You have to, like, work it out. And so what I did was I took the time during COVID to realize people are going to shop online. So I redid my entire website. I implemented a fit guide. So you put in your own sizing so that it really takes a lot of the questions and, out of what size you are, you know, so you can really get what size you are. It's very true to size. So that's been a really big help for us. And also the new imagery has been wonderful. And just rethinking how the whole online world works. Then I also went online kind of guerrilla style. And so, like you were saying, there's, you know, a lot of people gained weight during COVID, right? But then there's the other camp that lost a lot of weight. They took that as an opportunity to get fit. So a lot of these women on Instagram, you know, they started, hey, this is my weight loss journey. This is.
Normally when things break, I get crazy, but I just really like how Andrea is so just nonplussed. She's just like, fine, I'll just reboot again.
There we go. So the women who, you know, were posting photos about their weight loss and their getting fit, I reached out to them. I said, hey, you know, good for you. You should get a bathing suit, go shopping, you know, and it's true. Like good for them. Like, I know I was a casualty of the COVID-10 also. I've got myself together now and it's gone, but, so I empathize both camps there, but you know, I think just reaching out on a personal level and really, talking with women. And even now I love when I get comments on the swimwear, or people ask me personal questions or styling questions, or they're going on holiday. What do they suggest? It's really fun for me to be able to do that.
You have a lot of fans of how you're handling freezing, which is kind of fun. I said, you know, this really points to your skill sets in managing chaos. When this brand comes to its logical conclusion, as I'll do, like, you know, I'm pretty sure you're not going to have Swiminista on your tombstone. You have like 4 or 5 other companies still left in you. What makes you, I mean, you're obviously, you got to focus on the baby that you're with and you have to drive this thing. How do you look at the portfolio of your career and what you've been doing professionally, and how do you advise others?
My advice as far as advising others is just to really stick to what you're passionate about and keep forging through. You know, no matter what, there's always going to be obstacles, even when things are fantastic, you know, in the economy or however, and you just have to just stick through it. And I know it's always easier said than done, but we always have to have the belief that everything will be all right. It may not be exactly the picture that we had it in our heads, but everything will work itself out.
That's really good advice, especially on days when we keep freezing.
Right.
Andrea, what's, you know, we talked about the ecological side of things. We talked about the fact that, you know, it's post-consumer plastic and all that, and that there's just a lot of steps you're taking to that. What other ways are you working in sort of making values matter in the company, and how do you express that? Like, what's the soft, smushy side of all of what you're doing at Swiminista?
Well, my heart is like a rock. There is no soft side. No. no, you know, I we're doing a beach cleanup actually later this afternoon. We're always like on a personal level, I'm always cleaning up beaches. I'm always constantly recycling. I'm always, you know, if I get straws someplace, which drives me nuts, I take them home, put them in paper, and I put them through our shredder. So at least, you know, they don't become a weapon to sea life. And, you know, just trying to be kind to other people and share a smile with people, you know, as silly as maybe that sounds, I think when you're kind to people and respectful to people, you don't always get it back, but it's out there in the universe and putting really positive things out there. You know, when I grew up, my mother would always say, put positive out in the atmosphere. And I kind of thought she was like silly or whatever, but it's really true. You know, when you kind of this word manifest things, or, you know, I think if you put what you want out there, you do get it back. And it's not like instantaneous all the time, but I like to really give people a chance. I like to really work with people. Like employees come in and maybe, you know, they're not doing exactly what I'd like them to do. I don't just get rid of somebody, or, you know, I work with them to let them know exactly what I need for the company, what we're striving for. You know, every order that goes out has a personal handwritten note from myself or somebody on my team that, you know, hey, enjoy your suit. Enjoy, or some people say, I'm going to Mexico, or can you rush this? I'm going on holiday. It's like, yeah, great. Have a wonderful holiday. You know, I like to share the shopping experience at home, like you're opening a gift almost, you know. And I like to have fun, and I like to enjoy life. And I hope that that is expressed in everything that we do. And everyone works really hard. We do a lot of photo shoots. We do a lot of shipping, a lot of grunt work, and working in the warehouse. So there's all different aspects of everything. And it's really cool and important to show my daughter that as well. And, you know, it's good to get your brain functioning and all these different things. And it's really important and integral for anybody who's starting a business to know every single aspect of the business. I may not excel at every single aspect, but at least I know, like if something happens, I can jump in and do the invoicing. I do packaging, I do shipping, I ordering things, you know, every single aspect. It's really vital for your business that you know that. So you know how it's done, and you know how it's done right.
There's such a big distance between what you put together for a brand at Rockin' Republic and what you have here. What could you take with you, and what will you take with you into a new brand? If someone says, Andreas, stop this tomorrow, you got to go launch this new product. You know, let's pretend it's another, you know, clothing line or something. Where's the thread, or do we cut that? We always have to start from a, you know, tabula rasa. Did we freeze her on the perfect smile? Look, I just got a shit look. I mean, that's perfect. Nobody makes a freeze face like that. If you get a freeze face from me, you know what you're going to get? Unbelievable. She even freezes perfectly.
Well, the thread, the thread that I carry out is with branding and consistency. You know, I've got our stickers and boxes and everything that's branded really cool and clean. I've taken a lot of cues from Rockin' Republic as far as the construction of a garment. You know, we didn't invent denim at Rockin' Republic, right? But we just made it better. You put it on and you didn't realize what made it better. You know, it's just moving a little seam to the front so your thigh looks a little smaller. It's like all these little details. And I've taken those cues and I've brought that into my swimwear. So like I have ruching on the tush so your butt looks rounder. I have, you know, hidden supports. I have all these different little hidden things that you put it on. You're like, I don't know why I love this, but I just love it. So it's like the little tiny details, the hidden details that make things better. And it's really like every single piece is very thought out. Everything that I do has a reason. So if I were to do anything else, it just would have to happen organically. Like I didn't leave Rockin' Republic or Titan and think, oh, I'm going to start a swim brand because that's going to be cool. It was just out of necessity. And Rockin' Republic started the same way. I had a different business with my partner. He made a pair of jeans for his girlfriend. And we're like, okay, great. This would be a fun little hobby, right? We just wanted to get enough money that we would have health insurance for the company. And it started out that way. And then all the other brands, all the other shoes and handbags and everything else that came out of Rockin' Republic was kind of necessity. It's like, oh, well, we're doing a fashion show. Gosh, I wish we had shoes. Oh, you know, I wish I had a shirt to go with this. And then we started to make things. So it was always a very organic process. Wow. And I think that's when passion really comes into it, when it's an organic process. Like, I am so into making suits and designing things and making them comfortable and making them, you know, something that women can love and being adjustable and comfortable. It's all the elements that you want in a brand. And that's what I try to bring to people. So no matter what I do, it would have to be something, like I said, organic, and it has to be something good and positive.
Beautiful. All right. I'm grabbing back Autumn and Hannah, and we're getting near the end of this little canary show, but we did it. Freezes and all, we did it. You know, as you hear this, I mean, I have three women founders on. I have three people who run women businesses. It's not as easy. It's not as the road is not as paved with as good intent as we would hope. What do we want to say to people? What do they need to know about the good, the bad of it, how you're treated along the way, and what other people need to understand about this? I guess I'll make that question to everybody, but whoever is inspired to answer first, what's it like to run a business as a women-owned business, and what do you wish you had more of or less of?
A lot of questions. You know, for us, to start with your first part is, you know, paying it forward. So we were very lucky in our industry that we were deemed essential in this pandemic. And so being able to give back to people is crucial. And when the pandemic hit for us, how we were able to help in different ways was, one, we ended up buying our employees lunch 3 times a week with other farms in town to help keep the lights on for the restaurants that could no longer function. Hannah and Hans were key in setting up a nonprofit that was able to also really help, and she can talk more about that. You know, so being able to really give back, and as Andrea said, it always comes back to you as well, you know, but that's not why you necessarily do it. You just do it because it's really important to pay it forward to anybody and everybody that you can. So as you grow and you become more successful, or, you know, even a little bit more, it's always great to be able to just share that with whoever you possibly can.
I can't believe I had another frozen version of Andrea.
Oh, can you hear me now?
There you go. We're good. Yeah. I gotta put you back where you were though, because I'm weird. Hannah, do you want to add to that a little bit?
Yeah. So in the beginning, when the COVID quarantine started, there were a lot of people that, you know, normally go to school and they're students and they get fed at school, or different situations where people are getting food. And we realized that the food bank that was once a month seeing, you know, 200 cars was now trying to ramp it up to every week and seeing 600 cars. And so we're trying to figure out, besides just volunteering, how we could help and figure out how to get the people that needed this food, who were previously getting it from these different programs, could still receive it. So with my dad and I are in the local Rotary Club. So we use their charitable foundation to set up the 93013 fund. And one of the first things we did was start these food boxes. So every week we're working with the local, it's called the Farm Cart. And so they have a farm cart in town and they do boxes that people purchase every week or every 2 weeks. And so now we were purchasing these boxes and handing them out to the different people on the school's list that always get food. So it was, you know, you have that control of, these are the people who really need it, let's get it to them. We also started doing dinners for the old folks home and people that were, you know, so isolated. And so just this weekly dinner was kind of giving them all this hope, and the letters that we received just saying, like, this is what they're looking forward to every week. And this was before the government was all set up to step in and take over. So we did it for about 3 months, and then the grants came in and we got to say, okay, take it, keep going. Wow. To other people.
Big karma rolling in over there. Still going forward. You know, Andrea, I'm going to give you a slightly different question. Everybody else can answer it too. But Janice had this question. What's the advice you wish you knew when you started?
I wish I knew not to start. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I wish I knew how important every single little tiny detail is. You know, you just think, oh, I don't know, let's do a website. But it's like the tedious little details. I kind of forgot when I started Rockin' Republic, it was, my gosh, in 2000. So, and we sold it in 2011. So a lot of time has passed. And really starting something from scratch, just as something I wish I had remembered about the details. You know, you want a t-shirt logo, well, you have to do it, you know, measure how many inches down from the collar, how many inches over, how big, all the little things. You just, you have a vision in your head, but then getting it executed is a whole nother story.
It's huge. Autumn Shelton, what do you think?
There are so many different aspects to our company, right? So we're growing an agricultural product, which is hard in itself. And then you're creating a branded consumer product, which is just a whole nother world of difficulty and learning what the consumer wants and how to develop it and making sure you're really providing a consistent, amazing product. And then there's the other side of it, that this is a new industry. And so all the regulations and all the compliance and everything is still getting worked out today. You know, we were part of it. It was, you know, you had to really be able to adjust instantly. So, you know, something that we're really in still is, you know, we were able to get through it at the state level, but we're still at the county level trying to get through this process. And it's been 2.5 years. And so that's my big one, where I wish throughout this process that we've gone through, I wish I would have known how to make it go a lot faster than where we are today by understanding what the county needed or what the rules and regulations were a long time ago. So for me, that's really where I definitely, if I had a magic ball, that's what I would have hoped for.
That's what they sure didn't make it easy, though, because they change all the rules all the time and they make it, you know, draconian and hidden from view. But it's what we get. All right. Well, we're getting close to rolling out of this whole show, so I got a couple more things left to do.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
So my person of the day, I'm going to give it to Janice. And I was going to give it to Janice just because I really liked that she liked how Andrea handled her freezes. but, you know, just in general. That's our person today. So that entitles you to a whole free apple. You just have to go buy it yourself, clean it up and eat it. You'll be great. Everything wonderful. So we ask every single guest who's ever been on the show, what goes in your backpack? This could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. It could be something like an avocado. Saida Trujillo said avocado because she said, you know, it can add to a meal. Sometimes it can satisfy you as your only meal of the time. And then it could be something like pride in where one is from. And that was from Horacio Garcia Rojas, who is a Mexico City-based horror comedy actor of the show Diablero. Still playing on Netflix. So worth watching. So I think I'll start with Hannah. Hannah, what is something that goes in your backpack?
So I definitely think that you're going to need some snacks, whether you're going into the fashion industry and starting your own business or finding your passion in the cannabis space or any type of farming. You know, when something's really your passion, it's not going to be a quick success. It's going to take time. And, you know, this land use stuff that Autumn's going through, yeah, it's taking 10 times as long as we thought. So she needs lots of snacks to get to the finish line.
All right. So what's a good snack? What's in there?
So we always have like Kind bars here, those granola bars. Those are always good. But if you want to fit into that swimsuit, you know, an apple, banana.
That's not bad. You could try Bunch bars. We had the guest on yesterday selling Bunch bars, all natural and blah, blah, blah. But there's dark almond and there's peanut butter. Autumn Shelton, what goes in the backpack?
I'm going to say what goes in my backpack is staying true to who you are. You know, we've gone down this road now for a number of years, and we've had some people walk in our door and try to dangle a little carrot that didn't really feel right to us and was very arrogant or very out of line with who we are. And so our mantra for sure is definitely stay true to who we are, stay the course, and that's really helped us, our two families that own and operate this business, continue to grow and just have a lot of fun together.
That's a biggie. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but I'm almost out of show here. Andrea Bernholtz, what should go in the backpack?
Confidence, kindness, honesty, and lots of water.
Oh,
Lots of water.
I like it. Lots of water. Well, I'm right by the Atlantic Ocean, which is not nearly as fun to run and jump into right now in March. But, you know, I have the polar bear thing going. I guess I could do that. But we could do that too. That's a good one. I like that. We could end with that. Well, I was thinking about, you know, how does this all tie together? And obviously, you know, three very strong women. And I will tell you that my grandmother was a one-piece woman her whole life. But there was one time she really considered a bikini. And I'll tell you the one thing that she thought about that made her consider it.